Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, pairing beer and music since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Listen critically, enjoy responsibly.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. I am Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And this week, we are tasked, a task we gave ourselves, lovingly, Greg, with creating a primer to understanding King Crimson.
13 studio albums, 15 live albums, and countless personnel changes. Where do you begin?
Half a century of history.
Exactly. Let's start by discussing why we wanted to talk about this iconic band now.
Last year, 2019, was the 50th anniversary of the debut album by King Crimson. The group actually formed in London in 1968. The first of its 13 legendary studio albums came out in 69. This is one of the most important bands in rock history, I think, having been the cornerstone group of the whole progressive rock genre. Blurring that transition from the psychedelic period of the Beatles, Rubber Soul, Revolver, Sgt. Pepper's into this new sound, the new No Boundaries, you know, your classical music, avant-garde, structural Stockhausen stuff, you name it, and the kitchen sink played with incredible virtuosity.
No doubt. And many, many different lineups and incarnations of King Crimson with one sole constant.
Only one.
Robert Fripp. The guitarist, and I would say the philosophical leader of the group, in that no two albums should ever sound alike. Each incarnation of Crimson would be its own thing. It would not sound like any previous incarnation, nor would it sound like any future incarnation of King Crimson. So for some fans, it can be a bewildering group to love because no two versions of King Crimson, and there have been many, more than a half dozen, sound alike. And yet, that to me is the most amazing thing about this group, that it has maintained this standard for inventiveness throughout every one of its incarnations. Some you love less than others, but they're all incredibly intriguing.
Well, and it's with that thought that we decided to offer listeners three ways in. We're going to divide the long 50-year career of Crimson into three eras and focus on three albums that we think are all extremely rewarding. The rest, and you can sample at your own your own
hazard.
There's
a lot to dig into.
You know, and I got to say, Greg, you and I know our pop music history, but with Crimson, such is the devotion of the fans that if we get a minor footnote wrong, we're going to hear about it. But I think that's a testament to how deeply people love them.
Mm-hmm.
We have to put ourselves in London in 1968 to sort of get where this group was coming from. After the explosion in the Summer of Love of the kind of psychedelic Baroque pop epitomized by Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, a young guitarist named Robert Fripp is in a group called Giles, Giles, and Fripp. One of those two Gileses is a fantastic drummer named Michael Giles. They're making sort of psychedelic pop band like everybody in London was making in 67, 68. You know, we had a lot of bands that would give birth later to groups like Genesis and Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer. But Giles, Giles and Fripp is lost to the sands of history because they didn't accomplish anything.
Nature lends her subtle bounty, seasoning this rustic county, cares are a world away.
Then, with Michael Giles, the drummer, Robert Fripp links up with a talented keyboardist and songwriter named Ian MacDonald. MacDonald, at that point, is exceedingly enamored of this new instrument that back then cost what a car would cost. You know, you get a new MG or you buy a Mellotron. In this big, ungainly, rather ugly white box is the sound of an orchestra, triggered by tapes, literal tapes running in this keyboard that will give you the sound. Now, that had been popularized by the Moody Blues. But I think when we look at the history of the Mellotron as a predecessor of analog synthesizers, you know, the band that really, besides the Moody Blues, put it on the map was King Crimson. King Crimson's debut album, In the Court of the Crimson King, is considered one of those landmark debuts of all time, because it's one of those sort of perfect records, or so rock history would have us believe, from the cover art, which is a horrifying sort of a psychedelicized English version of Munch's The Scream, you know, yeah. A face in great distress. And what is this Crimson King with this mysterious face? Crimson King of medieval legends is the king who reigns over great bloodshed, hence the crimson. We are in the height of the Vietnam War. It is a violent time in Southeast Asia at the hands of the United States. King Crimson makes this debut that is in part beautiful orchestral, psychedelic folk pop, but in part some new sound we'd never heard before. The signature of that new part being the lead song, 21st Century Schizoid Man. Not only is Fripp's guitar incredibly powerful, distorted, it was said that Jimi Hendrix, saw King Crimson performing at a club in London before their big debut. Their first really big show was in front of 500,000 people with the Rolling Stones at Hyde Park. Right. But Hendrix saw a club gig, and he got up and he said, "This is the future of music. There's no point of any other band doing anything," which is pretty high praise. So the guitar of 21st Century Schizoid Man, but the vocals, everything in this song is saturated, distorted, overloaded. You talk about an opening track that says, "We are here, and you have not heard anything like this before." It's hard to think of others. Interesting footnote, you know, Kanye West samples it years later.
Yeah.
You know, it still sounds ahead of its time. No one man should have all that power. The clock's ticking, I just count the hours. Stop tripping, I'm tripping off the power. The system broken, the school's closed, the prison's open. We ain't got nothing.
You talk about the Vietnam War context. When people talk about progressive rock, they think about fairy tales and fanciful
islands,
worlds
floating in space.
And here they're singing about innocence raped with napalm fire and politicians' funeral pyre. I mean, they are right in the middle of the war that was consuming the world at that point in history.
Prepping this show for a couple of months. You know, A, it was the 50th anniversary of In the Court of the Crimson King last year, and it's a fantastic album. I remember buying it for like $4 at Corvette's, you know, a department store in Jersey, just because of the cover. And I'd heard this name mentioned with reverence. I spent a lot of time with it. This is not a perfect album. You know, Fripp was never the primary songwriter in King Crimson. He certainly didn't sing. He had Greg Lake, who would go on to great fame as one of Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, exceedingly talented vocalist, and that wonderful, rich baritone voice, right? you know, when he has Ian McDonald doing a lot of the songwriting, a lot of the orchestration with the Mellotron, there was a character named Pete Sinfield, who was the outside lyricist writing these tales. And, you know, Court of the Crimson King is split between something like 21st Century Schizoid Man, which is very much based in what is happening in the moment after the summer of love is eclipsed by the summer of hate. In 1968, we have riots across the USA, and then the war in Vietnam. And then there's, you know, something like I Talk to the Wind and Moonchild, which are like your typical, typical, I have smoked a whole lot of dope. I am lying on one of those English hillsides.
Right.
I'm imagining myself as a hobbit.
Mm-hmm. You know? Exactly.
I told.
But what a range. You go from Epitaph to 21st Century Schizoid Man. That is a huge range of emotional and psychic territory for this band to be covering.
Well, and you know, they are really ignoring all genres. There is classical music, as I said. There is folk. There is jazz. McDonald had done time as a musician in the army. So there are even marching music influences. There's improvisation. There's that classic British love of Victorian era. Mm. You know, a little of that Kinks,
yeah.
Village Green Preservation Society. And somehow it all comes together. And then they never duplicate it, never repeat it. You know, yeah. The band has fallen apart by the time the album comes out. McDonald and that incredible drummer, Michael Giles, leave to do more cheerful, more upbeat, cooler music, man. Right. You know, because Fripp is a taskmaster.
Yeah.
And Fripp says, well, I can disband King Crimson and you can stay, or, you know, I'll lead us in a new direction. This has been his modus operandi. So although he is... For 50 years history, the driving force of King Crimson, the only consistent member, he has often completely broken up the band, reshuffled it without even telling the people who'd been with him, sometimes for years.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to point out the ostensibly the title track. It's the album is In the Court of the Crimson King. The Court of the Crimson King is that massive, majestic.
Yes.
It's the only way I can describe it.
Nine minutes, 26 seconds.
And I remember hearing it again in that 2006 movie, Children of Men.
Mm.
And it's used so well in that movie, and it's just so powerful and just staggering. To me, that is kind of the promise and potential of progressive music in a lot of ways. You're thinking about these very classical kind of structures incorporated in a rock context.
The purple piper plays his tune, the choir softly sing. Three lullabies in an ancient tongue for the court of the crimson. We'll be right back.
and you know, even if it doesn't make any sense, because I have no idea who the Fire Witch is. Do you? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one part of
true,
the song.
Yeah.
All these songs are
what
multi-part.
What is the Return of the Fire Witch?
There's the Return of the Fire Witch, and then
there's the Dance of the Puppets.
I think the Dance of the Puppets is that kind of disjointed. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's happening. The lyrics never made a lot of sense. I don't think Pete Sinfield's loss was significant to the band, nor Ian McDonald, who, it must be said, has the two most disjunctive careers in rock history. He goes from King Crimson, the first great progressive rock band, to...
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love.
Foreigner.
Foreigner! You're as cold as ice! How does that happen? I don't know. I also have to just give a shout out to, you know, in the world of drum geek modern drummer subscribers like me, right? Mm. Michael Giles is a giant. I think the reassessment of his playing on this album started years ago, when in every interview he gave, Neil Peart of Rush would say, Michael Giles is why I picked up the drumsticks.
Mm. Yeah.
And he was a drummer's drummer. Never did anything in the rock world, again, that got anything near this level of recognition. But his drumming is just – and I think every progressive rock drummer who follows tries to do what he's doing. That sort of jazz, odd time signature, incredible, sophisticated playing, but with a rock drive.
Right. Right, exactly. That's Moonchild, an undeniable classic by King Crimson. Now, after a short break, we're going to look more at the discography of King Crimson, including their proto-metal turn on 1974's Red. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.